Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game. John Truck, we're back in the Key Studios with you. Yeah, you knew I was going to hit that one, didn't you? Yeah. You know what's cool about this song? That Candy Burris from, is it Escape? She's one of the Real Housewives of Atlanta, wrote this song. I follow her on Twitter, but she's one of the Real Housewives of Atlanta, Candy Burris. She wrote this song. This is such a great song. And yes, I am a fan of the Real Housewives of Atlanta. I've said that before. That's definitely one of my guilty pleasure TV shows. Those reunion shows are wonderful. I love all of them. Sheree Whitfield, NeNe, Kim, Candy. Who's the other one? Who am I missing? I can't remember now. I'm missing the other one. That bothers me. I can't name all the housewives. Well, there's Portia. That's another one. But Cynthia. That's the other one. Lordy. I should be better brushed up on my Atlanta housewives there, Brian. Oh, sorry. You don't have to respond. We are streaming online. It's 929thegame.com. Go there on the website. We will later on have the show reposted up there. So hour by hour, we will get you up today. If there's anything that you missed, want to go back and listen, you want to go back and correct something I said, or just can't believe I actually said something on air, you can have it for posterity. Actually, too, though, I'm sure like people go back and listen and say, well, you said this on this day or whatever like that. So that's why I've been gotten more of all of that. Don't forget your radio.com app. If you got a phone, a tablet, whatever, download it on there. That way, as you're on the go and at the gym on the treadmill, you're at the park, walking the dog, doing whatever, download that. You can listen to us live, local, anywhere on any device that you've got. All of our social media, you want to go to at 929thegame. That'd be Twitter. That'd be Facebook. That'd be Instagram. Check us out there. Keep up to date with all the happenings on the show, all the picks, all the different events we got going on. And I'm legal and legit. I've signed all my paperwork, so I'm cleared by Intercom. I can say I am at JMCH316 because I signed my paperwork and I said the station's handle first. So did I follow the company protocols on that? Okay, very good. So some other Falcons news. So our buddy Dave Choate at the Falcoholic put together an article talking about how will the Falcons divvy up their touches at running back in 2018. And I'm going to talk a little bit about this with Randy tomorrow as well. Don't forget Randy McMichael and I filling in for Fricky and Hugh on the morning show 6 to 10 tomorrow, is trying to give everybody on team have a day off, but Randy is working. So I believe he's the only team have working tomorrow. I have to look and see. Because the producers are all off too. I know Brian's producing us, but I think all the team havers except Randy will be off tomorrow. And I imagine the Sports Flash guys too. I imagine they'll be off as well. So everybody can kind of get a nice Memorial Day holiday off. So he writes in here talking about that despite playing one fewer game than Tevin Coleman, Devontae Freeman still outtouched his backfield mate 232 times to 205 times in 2017. Now, That includes your rushing attempts and your pass catches on there. But what's interesting is how close of a breakdown that was between those two running backs. I think we all agree that obviously Freeman is the bell cow back, if you will, that he's more of the feature back than what Coleman is, and they use Coleman a good bit. But in the other 2 years that Coleman has been an Atlanta Falcon, when you start to look at touches, 2016 – Freeman played all 16 games. Coleman played 13 games. Freeman had 281 touches to 149 for Freeman. Or, sorry, for Coleman. Freeman had 281 touches. Coleman had 149. The disparity was massive, obviously, in Tevin Coleman's rookie year. Now, he only played 12 games, but Freeman only played 15 himself. That breakdown was 338 touches to 89 for Tevin Coleman. So, as you can see, obviously, the Falcons, as Coleman has gone along, have gotten more and more and more to where he's becoming a more integral part of what they do with their running back position. You know, I would tell you that if somehow that Coleman had about the same number of touches as Freeman, I don't think that's a bad thing for a couple of reasons. Number one is Tevin Coleman's not going to be here after next year. I highly doubt, and I can't imagine a scenario that the Falcons can break him off and pay him money to keep him here. Somebody's going to give Tevin Coleman RB1 money. Somebody's going to pay him that Michael Turner type of deal that we gave Michael Turner when he was backing up LaDainian Tomlinson. He doesn't have that tread on the tire. He's still got a lot of upside. He can run. He can catch. What I'm going to be very curious about for Tevin Coleman this year is, would they throw him out there on special teams for punt and kick returns? He did do it at Indiana. Had experience in the punt and kick return game. Would they consider doing that? I would have no problem for them using Coleman every bit as much as Freeman, not just because he's not going to be here after next year, but at the same time, you worry about Freeman's health. You worry about Devontae's health with the number of concussions that he's had. Maybe this is a chance that, yeah, I know he signed the big contract and he's supposed to be the feature guy, but maybe it wouldn't be such a bad idea to monitor how much he touches the football. Now, I will tell you that one of the things that I think this offense needs to do a better job of this coming season is get back to throwing to your running backs more. And we just talked about, yeah, we arguably have the greatest wide receiver core in the history of our franchise. But getting Freeman and Coleman out in space is something that, you know, a couple of years ago really makes a nightmare scenario for defenses. It's bad enough when you have to try to just key on Julio and Sanu, and now you've got Calvin Ridley in the mix, and certainly Hooper. You know, I mean, you talk about a guy who has the ability to benefit more in an offense. Think about Austin Hooper from the standpoint of how many guys in the NFL have the opportunity to benefit more from an offense than what the Falcons do with Hooper, because he's, you know, a fifth, sixth option on this team. Like, he's a guy that if you look at two of his biggest plays ever were complete busted coverage, blown coverage plays. In his rookie year, the play against Carolina and the play against Oakland, where he's wide open by 50 yards. Because you have so many other weapons and so many other guys touching the football. So it wouldn't upset me if at the end of the day that the touches are the same or a little bit more in favor of Coleman. And Coleman from the standpoint of he probably catches more passes out of the backfield. Devontae probably leads this team in rushing attempts, but you put Coleman and let him catch the football and get him out in space. And I know it may not be a popular thing, but run him into the ground. I would squeeze every drop of juice out of Tevin Coleman I could this year and maximize what I get out of him. And obviously this offense, as we said, 232 to 205, from 281 to 149 the year before, this offense is getting more and more geared to, or, you know, getting an equal amount of opportunity for both of these backs out there. And I hope we get back to, like I said, a lot more of throwing to our running backs. If, you know, a couple of years ago, Freeman had, what, 73 catches out of the backfield? That's a good thing, in my opinion. I'd much rather get those guys the ball out in space, get him and Coleman out there in some space, and let them do their thing. I think that's when this offense really, really gets it going out there. It's a dynamic duo to have, and it's obviously a good problem to have. 404-741-0929 is our phone line. Mel?
Chuckery.
Yes, sir.
I'm sitting here listening to you.
You called me by my name.
Yapping,
you called me
yapping,
by my name.
Yapping, talking about the Falcons and their players. Coleman going to get
you
paid.
You sure you don't want me to call, you want to call me Meatloaf to just make it more similar for you?
You're just yapping, man. That's all you're doing? Because I know you got to make these 4.5 hours. But all you're doing is just yapping. And another thing, too. What I just told the guy who answered the phone.
Yeah, he can't talk.
Was
you call him Meatloaf, too.
He's going to score 60 points. and take away that old soft player that we had in Atlanta.
So you think LeBaron goes for 60 tonight?
King James will go score 60 points tonight. Almost 60.
Mm-hmm.
And that old soft player that we got rid of for the Hawks? Can't call his name. You know what I'm talking about. We were in him out of town. And y'all, we're talking about Lillard for San Antonio. We don't need him in Atlanta, man.
We don't? We don't need a first-team All-NBA. We don't need a first-team All-NBA player.
Look here, all the players you're talking about.
You don't want Cowie.
You know you were talking about something. About
you don't want Cowie here.
Bring in the half-man relief pitcher.
You don't want Hartner? You don't want Hartner coming in here?
Player. The team, all these teams need to stay young,
What about Kindrell? You want Kindrell to come in here?
We don't need him.
We don't need him.
Kendrick? We don't need him.
We don't want Hartler?
Let him stay out there and where copper bands are, just like you are. We don't need them players in Atlanta.
Now, did you call up Lamb Chop and give him all this information?
No, you called him. Since you already bring his name up, you called him.
Well, every time I turn on, I hear Mel.
He's going almost 60 points tonight. And Harper, that we ran out of town.
Hartler.
That
solid
player that we used to have for the Hawks.
Hornford.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
I don't want to call his name, but he was soft. That's why.
Adam Hornford.
He's going to score 60 points on it.
Okay.
That jump tonight.
So LeBaron's going to go for 60 tonight. That was a mic drop.
Well, I appreciate that, carpetbagger.
He called me by my name. Must be desperate. Alex out in Marietta. What's going on, Alex?
Hey, man. How's it going? First of all, I don't know why you guys let that guy on the air every time. He's crazy. Anyways, to address your point about Devontae Freeman, Tevin Coleman, absolutely agreed. We certainly need to give Tevin Coleman more touches. A year ago or 2 years ago when we gave Devontae Freeman that deal, I was up in arms. I love Free. Don't get me wrong. But I still think since we drafted him, Tevin Coleman is and should have been the feature back from day one. I think we're highly going to regret giving Tevin Coleman away for Devontae Freeman. Coleman's just an all-around better player, and it's going to be sad to see him go. Aside from that, I think this year with the Falcons, I expect us to win the division. But one thing that I would love to see is we do not give Rico a new deal. I think Ricardo Allen is by far the worst player on our defense. And he's not even that bad. He's just too small, too slow, and hands down the least athletic player on our defense. That's a fact. And I wish we could maybe give DeMonte Casey a try at the free safety, give him full-time reps, but I'm a huge anti-Ricardo Allen fan. He always gets late hits. And he's just too small. He sucks at open field tackling.
Thanks, Alex. The thing about Allen, though, I like Ricardo Allen a lot, but he's the ultimate Dan Quinn guy, right? All gas, no brakes, fast and furious, high Hunger Games index. What else do we have? I need some more bumper sticker slogans. He's all that, right? I mean, I like Ricardo a lot. Is he a limited player? Sure. But he does all those things that Dan Quinn wants. He plays all over, got the high motor, high Hunger Games index. He's got all that stuff out there. So, but it will be interesting to see with the room. And we didn't even mention Ito about whether or not he's going to get a role in this offense or not. All right, when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about Atlanta United. We kind of touched on with Jason yesterday about this article from Doug Roberson about how Atlanta, the United, feel like they have to respond better to adversity. Is that potentially their Achilles heel in winning an MLS championship? We'll talk about that next. John Chuck, Reading the Key Studios, Sports Radio, 929 The Game and 929TheGame.com. Sports Radio, 929 The Game. Babies, mamas, ex-wives that you have to pay for. John Chuck, in the Kia Studios. 404-741-0929 is our phone line. Yeah, those are our Solomon Brothers Diamond text line if you want to interact with the show. So I've asked Jarrett to hang around with us for a few minutes because I want to talk about, and Jarrett hosts one of our 14,000 podcasts that we have. But yours
14,001 now.
Okay. Yours is off the woodwork, right?
Yes.
You and my good friend Carlos.
Yes.
As we say, that's more inside baseball. Yeah. So anyway, CCV for those of you playing at home. But I want to get your thoughts, too, about this. I thought this was an interesting article and some comments about from Doug Roberson from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, covers Atlanta United and all that good stuff. And obviously a lot of controversy the last couple of home matches with VAR and red cards and this and that and all that kind of stuff. And he titles the article, Atlanta United Players Say They Must Respond Better to In-Game Adversity. And two quick quotes, I should say, from Jeff Lorenowitz that I wanted to read and kind of comment on. One is he talks about, you know, the VAR, the VAR is not going away. He says, it seems like in games it has been some monumentous decisions that really shift the way the game goes. That's something that never in your life of soccer have you had to prepare for. Now it's something that we have to become better at. And he also goes on to say when talking about playing some of these teams that they seem to be all getting at hot times, he says, quote, it seems like we are getting every team at an interesting point in their season. I think mentally it's been difficult because the games have been so big. Mentally it's been a difficult one, but it's something you deal with and get better as you get older. And so, Jared, I want to kind of ask you and get your thoughts about with a team that hasn't really had to face a lot of adversity. Let's face it, this franchise has not seen a lot of negativity or adversity. Are they ready to handle? Because that playoff game last year was a lot of adversity for what happened. But this is supposed to be MLS Cup time. Are they going to be able to overcome? Is this going to be kind of not the talent, but the above the shoulders aspect of it?
I mean, they've got the talent to do it, and they've got the veterans to do it. One weird thing about VAR is it's still relatively new in the grand scheme of things. So even the veterans who have been around the league, like Orlo Rodowitz, like Michael Parkhurst, who've been around the league for, you know, over a decade, they're learning about it, too. They're learning how to deal with it, too, because it wasn't there when they started. Every team is having to learn how to deal with this. They had a VAR case last night in a match out in Los Angeles, a really weird one, where they went to video review, and the answer they came back with just perplexed a lot of people. Like, how did you look at that and come away with that response and that call? So there's always going to be these weird cases of VAR, and every team is going to have to learn to deal with it. I don't think Atlanta's alone in terms of they've got to learn to be better about dealing with it. And unfortunately for them, the last two games, when it has gone to video review, it has been pivoting moves. It's been moments in the game where it's
completely
pivoted things. They benefited from one earlier this year when LA came to town and Chris McCann gets a red card in the second minute. They go to VAR and flip it. That flipped that game as well. I mean, it has a habit of flipping games entirely, and they responded well after that one. I think they got a little shook up when McCann got sent off, but they recovered very well, kind of got themselves reorganized and got back into it. I think they'll be okay in the long run, but it's a learning experience even for the veterans dealing with something like this.
Well, let me say it like this, too. So here in Atlanta with the Falcons, for instance, we always talk about Robert Alford. Robert Alford is a very handsy corner. I mean, he plays with his hand. And because of that, he sets himself up to get lots of pass interference penalties, okay? Joseph Martinez is a very aggressive player. He sets himself up to get calls that won't go his way, get offsides calls. You're not going to change him. But I think he also has to understand that while you love the way that he plays like that, you are going to set yourself up for sometimes things are not going to go your way. Just like we complain about Alford in the NFL. Well, he gets too many penalties. Well, yeah, if you're aggressive and you play with your hands, you set yourself up. Yeah, if you push downfield, and I'm the expert about how you are offside now, but when you play like that, Jarrett, it's not always going to work out in your favor.
And he wears his emotions on his sleeves, and I think that rubs some people the wrong way. And it's kind of that inverse to what we, in Atlanta, we're used to watching guys like Tom Glavine, you know, switching sports for a moment. You know, Tom Glavine you didn't know if he had a perfect game going or if he'd given up 8 runs in the first inning. He had the same stoic demeanor. That's not Joseph. Joseph wears everything on his sleeves. Highs and lows are very plainly visible. And, yeah, he plays an aggressive style. I believe Opta measures advanced stats in soccer, had him at 0.79 goals a game without penalties, which is the highest in MLS by far. I mean, he's still, even with having 2 goals taken away that people get upset about, he's still on an absurd pace, and he's still producing at an absurd level. But yeah, I mean, when he plays that way, and now that everything can kind of be put under a microscope, everything's going to be put under a microscope. And a lot of the response from fans and players both have been, every time a goal is scored now, no one's celebrating. We're looking at the official waiting for him to put his hand to his ear and go to the monitor. And once the – everyone's holding their breath until the ball is kicked off again.
Well, but like we said, the young team, they haven't had a lot of adversity. You have to have some of those growing pains out there.
I'd rather have them now than
October. Figure this stuff out now. And if that – and if that means some things don't work your way, then some things don't work your way. You still have to think 30,000 feet. You can't think 30 feet. You have to think 30,000 feet because what's the bigger picture in all this? And I thought I didn't know the numbers, and Jason Longshore was kind of telling us yesterday. Because what, Almiron is one yellow card away from missing a game. Who was the other person that he said? Who's the other person that's
Leandro Gonzalez-Pirez won't play this week.
Well, he's out. Him and Garza are both out.
I believe Larenowitz is at four now.
Okay, so Larenowitz is right there. So he's like one or so away. So, and Jason made a point of, hey, they're playing so many games over the next couple of weeks that it's very likely that Almiron probably picks up. So you're going to have to get used to life here or there without the idea. And I'm not talking about like their depth. I'm just talking about from that mental perspective, because I thought it was an interesting thought about the article that, you know, look, they're the hunted now. They're not the team that's this cute little upstart team and all that kind of stuff. You know, the captain from Minnesota talking about, well, everybody talks about it. That's where the league is going to look at them. And everybody's going to put that bull. You know, we talk about like in all these times, like, you know, you're the hunted. Now everybody's bullseye. You know, Georgia's now got the bullseye on them. Okay, that's Atlanta United now. Everybody wants to take their best shot at Atlanta United. And you're going to have to overcome some of that and realize, hey, maybe some of these teams will get geeked up more. They're going to play. But that's just part of the process.
It looked like that last night. Red Bulls played after they beat Atlanta. They played last night. And it wasn't a terrible game, but it looked like the kind of game that you play after you just played a really emotional game that you got up for. And Red Bulls are good. It's not like Red Bulls were a bad team that got up to play Atlanta. That's a really good team.
Yeah, they've been on a really good roll.
Yeah, and they had a letdown last night, and I believe they pulled a draw with Philadelphia. But, I mean, it's...
It was a bad team, by the way, right? I mean, Philadelphia's really bad.
Philadelphia has problems that they need
but that's a team that but that's a team that United's got coming up.
They're
going to
give you your best shot.
Yeah.
And you're right. Every team is going to punch above their weight coming into you. And the Larenowitz comments as well that it's been mentally taxing, because we asked him physically, because he's 34 years old, like, physically, how taxing is it? And he said, it's easier to take care of your body, but as you get older, you learn what you can do and what you can't do and how to recover. It's the mental aspect of they've been catching teams that are either hot, or you've got the Zlatan thing where you've got, you know, this kind of emotional wave because of a you know, an international player coming in, or teams are just going to throw their best shot at you. And that is mentally taxing. And that's a lot of times where you're going to lean on these veteran leaders to just say, look, been here before. Some of these veterans, like Parkhurst, they've won titles. They know what it takes to win a title in this league. Even a couple of years ago when the league was a little bit different, you got to look to them, and they've got to be the ones to say, here's how we deal with this mentally. Here's how we recover mentally and get ready for the next team's best shot.
And not only that, Jared, but so take a team like Philadelphia that's not very good, okay? You look for a flaw in what United does. And even if you're not as talented, though, Jared, you go try to expose it. And if that means you have to, you know, because I think what some teams are going to do is – sell their soul a little bit for what they do to try to expose the flaws of what Atlanta does. And that's just, look, that happens on everything. I mean, just you can go to football and say, look, guys are going to all out blitz you because they don't think your wide receiver is good or your quarterback, whatever it is, your offensive line is good. They'll find that little crack and try to expose it. And that's where what's interesting is, you know, what does a Philadelphia or some of these teams that maybe aren't as good find that little crack, and let's see if they try to really go at Atlanta United on it, and how do they respond? You know, because if they are that behemoth, then when they try something that's out of their character, the other team try, you go kick the crap out of them. You go kick them right in the shin, if you will, and just knock them down and say, you're not getting back up for this.
And we'll see it Wednesday night when you go to New England. You're playing a New England team that just played last night in Vancouver, So now they played last night in Vancouver.
Coming all the way back across the country.
One of the longest trips you can take on this continent. They've got to welcome Atlanta to town. They play an aggressive press. It's different from what they played last year. They played to a draw last year in New England, last year at home. Atlanta pumped 7 goals on them and tied the record for the biggest margin of victory in league history in a really weird game. But they're going to throw everything they have at you. You need to weather it. You need to counterpunch. And one thing that's been killing a lot of people lately with United is they don't put away all their chances. They create
especially early.
Yeah, they're a number of games they've had going back to the Orlando game, going back to the LA game where they beat the Galaxy on the road. They won that game and they won in Orlando. Both of those games could have been dead by halftime. They need to get better at that because I think. And then we run into this. How often do we talk about this in Atlanta sports? But like the Falcons,
yeah,
where they get
put
a team
teams
down,
away, right?
And
step
they
on their neck.
They
yep.
don't.
Yeah,
and United has the players with the instinct to do that. Right now, they're just not executing it, and they need to start doing it. It'll take some of the stress off of the end of games for them.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I mean, and Jason gave us the stats a few weeks ago about the disparity between first and second half goals for the way that this team is. And you're right. Look, you want to put away a Philadelphia Union, go up 2-0 in the first 26 minutes on them. And that game becomes over at that point.
Yeah.
Because when you – because that would have – there's certainly no question that that could have happened against the Red Bulls. If that's 2-0 in whatever the time was, you know, that's certainly changing. But I think he's right. I think Doug's got, and I don't know if Doug intentionally kind of went down this road, but Lorenowitz's comments are interesting, Jared, because this team has not seen a lot of negative, and it's been all sunshine and roses. But the last two games at home haven't gone their way, and they've played at home. And it hasn't gone their way at all.
No, and that's – how do you bounce back? Now you have to show us. It's not about yeah. – you can talk all you want, but now you've got to show us. And I think having a home game against Philadelphia is a good chance next weekend. It's the right kind of team where
right.
you can try and, you know, try and put your foot through them a bit and try and get the positive momentum going back and then carry that momentum through a tougher slate of games that's coming up.
Good stuff. Thanks, Jarrett. Appreciate that. When we get back – there's a huge event in Americana sports today. Are people still in tune? What are some of these big events outside the big three that you just don't kind of get geeked up for anymore? We'll talk about all that next. John Chuckery in the Key Studios, Sports Radio 929 The Game. Sports Radio 929 The Game. This is a good song, too. I'll take segment off, Brian. You can do the segment. Oh, wait. You'd have to talk. Or just play the music the whole segment. John Chuckery back in the Kia Studios. 404-741-0929. That's our phone line. Also our Solomon Brothers Diamond text line. Be part of the show. You said that hour one is up on the website, or actually our discussion about the Falcons running back situation. Did we get Mel? And his thought, we didn't get Mel's thoughts. Oh, it's too bad. That's too bad. Because he wanted to talk about Friedman and Coleslaw, the running back spot. So, because he wanted to talk about not signing Hartler and Kindrell to the Braves as well. Oh, Lordy. So, one of the events taking place today, which was a staple of my youth, is the Indianapolis 500. And while I'm not telling you it's not a popular event, but it's certainly one of those events. I mean, I guess Sam Crenshaw was telling me Tony Stewart's over in Monaco. You know, Monaco's going on right now. I'm not even sure the Indy 500, obviously, on the world stage is what Monaco is. But, you know, when I was growing up, the Indy 500 was one of those must-watch type of events in sports. I mean, whether you were a fan of racing or not or whatever like that, it was just such a piece of Americana that you watched it. You know, maybe you didn't watch every lap and every mile and everything like that, but there were so many more, you know, back in the A.J. Foyt days and stuff, there were so many more personalities and you knew more of the drivers, and it was such a big event that it was just kind of one of those rites of passages about the sporting calendar going into summertime. And I'm curious, what other events outside the big three are kind of like that? I mean, have what are these events have lost their luster to kind of what you always watched out there. Because you look at some of the ratings for, like, NASCAR this year. NASCAR has gone way down. Some people would say that the Derby has lost some of its luster. Heavyweight title fights. And the problem is when you don't have a great heavyweight division, that's what happens. I think boxing would do itself well to get back to broadcasting on regular TV. Get off of all Showtime, all HBO, and even get back to Fox and CBS. Brother, when I was growing up, that's what my dad and my grandfather and I did a lot of times on Saturday was we'd watch boxing when it was Ray Boom Boom Mancini and Alexis Arguello and guys like that were fighting on Saturday afternoon. That's what we did. That's what we were watching. You know, would we watch baseball or football or but we watched boxing. We watched those kinds of things. I think boxing would do itself well to get back to regular TV. Take a page out of what MMA does, right? They do stuff, don't they? Still do? They do stuff on Fox and stuff. Brian, does MMA do stuff on Fox? And I asked you directly, so.
UFC just signed a $1.5 billion deal with ESPN.
Okay. But weren't they on Fox and stuff like that, though?
They did have a series on Fox. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, I mean, they put that stuff on regular TV. Now, I will say I disagree about the Masters because, and Brian was giving me a list because he can't talk. Brian, I disagree about the Masters. And I say that because Masters is must-watch golf. But I would tell you, I think the mystique of the other majors, the U.S. Open, the PGA, and even to a lot of degree the British Open, I think those tournaments have lost some of their luster. The Olympics, for sure. Olympic viewing has been down, and maybe we're too saturated with Olympic coverage. But if you think about it, there was a time when the Olympics were taped late. Like anybody who tells you that they saw the USA-Russia hockey game in 1980 live is lying to you. That was a tape-delayed event. We knew the results before we actually saw the event. And that wasn't a gold medal game, too. That's the other lie everybody tells you, is that, you know, when the U.S. won the gold medal. No, they had to play Finland and beat them for the gold medal. So the Olympics at one time weren't a big deal. Then I think in the 80s, especially when 84 came along, but think about in the Summer Olympics, we knew everybody. They were much more Americana figures. The Bruce Jenners, the Carl Lewis's, the Edwin Moses, even the women, Flo Jo, Jackie Joyner Kersee, Greg Louganis. Those were much more household names, and especially the gymnasts, Mary Lou Retton, Carrie Strug. Those were much more, and even the international people, the Nadia Comaneci's and people like that, those people were much more. And I know some people still love to watch the Olympics. The Winter Olympics, to me, is dreadful. I mean, they've tried to incorporate these esports and all this. I mean, with all due respect, when Lindsey Vonn and Shaun White, maybe the biggest Winter Olympics star, there's something wrong. Because you should know all the figure skaters. That was as Americana as it got. Even if you didn't like the Winter Olympics, you had to watch the figure skating. You had to watch Dorothy Hamill and Peggy Fleming and Tanya Harding, right? Tanya Harding didn't compete in the – I don't think she competed in the Olympics. But what's her name? The girl that the movie was about. Drawing a blank. But Yamaguchi and all that. I mean, you knew all the names of the figure skaters as you were growing up. So, yeah, the Olympics as a whole, and especially the Winter Olympics, has become something that it's kind of there – and there's so much of it, you know, in the background, you know, of it. But it is interesting because, you know, the Indy 500, you know, even as a kid growing up, that's something that you just watch. You watch the personalities. And open wheel was a big deal especially like in the late 70s and 80s. I mean, open wheel was a big deal. Those were big races. That was probably more popular in some ways than what NASCAR was at that point in time. I mean, I went to Mid-Ohio and would watch open wheel. And, you know, Paul Newman was racing in Mid-Ohio, or see the Skull Bandit car. I had a Skull Bandit T-shirt for it. I didn't know what the hell Skull was. You know, as a kid, I wasn't doing Skull. I mean, my mom was or something. I don't know, but I wasn't doing Skull. But see, it was cool to have the Skull Bandit and stuff like that out there. But boxing's certainly a good one because I can tell you, as a kid growing up, we watched all boxing. I mean, my grandfather and father and I, Wide World of Sports, CBS. You know, we watched Ray Mancini kill Duck Koo Kim. That was on live TV. That was on Saturday afternoon TV. Not a great moment, but I mean, that we watched boxing. And it used to be I would go to places to watch the pay-per-view fights. And a buddy of ours that ran a cigar store for years and years would always have the big fights. I wonder what, and I know it's not a pure sports event, but the wrestling pay-per-views. Are the wrestling pay-per-views as popular as they once were? Are they still pretty popular? Are they still getting the kind of numbers that they did back in the WWF Attitude days and all that kind of stuff? Are they still as popular? Because that used to be must-watch for us as well, was in the days of The Rock and Stone Cold and Triple H and The Undertaker. Those were always must-watch. The pay-per-views were must-watch out there, even more than you know, Raw and SmackDown and all that stuff. I mean, those were must. Now, I'm sure they probably still do pretty well, and I know SmackDown just signed a big deal with somebody to broadcast or whatever like that. I know the ratings for Raw are still really good, really, really good out there. But I don't know what the pay-per-view numbers are for all of that. But it's a different sports culture. I mean, that's for sure. I mean, you look at the numbers for NFL, they're off the chart. You know, the NBA final, if we do get Cavs Warriors in the NBA finals, I promise you they're going to be still off the chart numbers. NBA numbers are really strong out there. And baseball's made a definite resurgence, especially in local markets. You know, baseball's become not so much, it's national because of ESPN, but the Fox Sports South and those types of deals and stuff like that, trying to keep you much more on a local level. Now, when I was growing up, baseball was, you know, you had one national game and then you watched all your games on, you know, I watched it on WUAB, you know, which was, basically, WAB would be like the CW. It'd be like the way the Falcons pregames are broadcast. It wasn't on like one of the big three networks out there. All right, when we come back, there's a former NFL quarterback that retired from football. Who even knew he was playing? We'll give you that next. John Chuckman, the Key Studio Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game. Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game. Welcome back into the Kia Studios. John Chuck, we're here with you. Hanging out till 2 o'clock on a beautiful Sunday afternoon, long holiday weekend. Don't forget, Randy McMichael and I tomorrow morning, 6 to 10, hanging out for John Fricke and Hugh Douglas. Brian is going to be here with us, not talking. I'm as petty as they come, I promise you. So a former NFL quarterback has decided to retire, not from the NFL, but from the CFL. Former Tampa Bay Buccaneers quarterback Josh Freeman is retiring from the Montreal Alouettes. Now, I don't know if he's more famous than Vince Ferragamo, who played for the Montreal Alouettes. I don't know which one is more famous. But Freeman, who's 30 years old, had signed a two-year deal with the Alouettes in January in an attempt to resurrect his once promising NFL career, but found himself at the bottom of the depth chart 1 week into training camp. That's a pretty good sign your football career is over when you're at the bottom of the depth chart on a CFL roster, right? That's a pretty good way to know. So we would like
not,
to think
not even a good CFL right. roster. They were the yes. last place team in the
yes.
East last year.
Yes, Montreal. Yes, we would like to thank Josh for his work and dedication. He was a consummate professional throughout camp. This is from Cavis Reed, the Alouettes general manager. We respect his decision, and we wish him the best in the future. Now, he last played in the NFL in 2015, where he had one regular season start for the Colts for 149 yards, a touchdown, and an interception. He was the 17th pick in the 2009 NFL draft. But that's life as a quarterback in the NFL. Plenty of those guys to go around. So with these two Game 7s, we certainly have three of the best five players in the NBA for this decade. Do we maybe even have two of the best players of all time? We're going to look at some 80s, 90s, and now all-NBA teams and contrarian compass. It's up next. John Chuck, Green, the Key Studio, Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game. Oh, oh.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly Auto Parts.